The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Love it or hate it, smart technology is here to stay. The only thing we can do is laugh about it, of course. Lucky for us, Dorothy Rosby can help with that. Today we'll hear stories from her book, Alexa's a Spy and Other Things to be Ticked Off About, Humorous Essays on the Hassles of Our Time, copyright 2020. First up, the book's introduction, Laugh, Die, or Punch Someone. I never fell for that urban legend that was making the rounds a few years back. The one that said, on average, children laugh over 300 times a day, but adults laugh only 17. It just didn't add up. Unless they don't sleep, kids would have to laugh every few minutes all day long, and that wouldn't leave much time for throwing tantrums and bickering with their siblings. I'm sure children do laugh more than adults, though. Why wouldn't they? They aren't getting spam and robocalls all day long. They aren't paying a mortgage and worrying about their college fund. And most kids I know don't follow current events. I'd laugh, too. Speaking of current events, every time we turn on the news, there's another disaster. An earthquake, a pandemic, an election. There's only one thing to do. Stop turning on the news. I'm joking. As citizens, it behooves us to stay informed. Plus, if we bury our heads in the sand, we leave our backsides vulnerable. But with all we have to deal with, I think we'd be lucky to laugh 17 times a day. It would be grand to laugh more, but counting how many times we do it might take some of the fun out of it. I've read that, among its many health benefits, laughter boosts immunity, lessens pain, lowers blood pressure, and decreases stress hormones. It's not just that if you don't laugh, you'll cry. If you don't laugh, you'll die. Or punch someone. Then they might punch back. I think we can all agree laughing almost always beats both alternatives. So what's stopping us from getting our recommended daily allowance of laughter? I'm going to tell you. What follows is a rant. A good-natured rant, but a rant nonetheless. It's about some of the things that keep us from laughing. The things we're irritated, angry, or worried about. The things that sap our energy during the day and keep us awake at night. Now that I think about it, that doesn't sound funny at all. Too late. I've already written the book. I hope you laugh at least 17 times by the time you get to the end of it. But I don't offer a money-back guarantee. Disclaimer, portions of a few of these essays have appeared in some fashion in one of Dorothy's previous collections. She used them with her permission. She's nice like that. Smartphones are working their way into our homes and into our relationships. Dorothy Rosby's next joke, chapter, Alexa, Siri, and Cortana walk into a bar. Anne says her husband is having an affair. She told a group of us having lunch that she'd seen them together. You know her, Anne said. She's 3 feet wide and has one big eye in the middle of her forehead. Her name is Magna. Magna Vox. We all laughed. Sort of. Turns out, several of my friends suspect their husbands of having Magnas or Sonys on the side. Lily said that when she and James were newlyweds, the first thing he did when he came home from work was kiss her. Now, 5 years later, the first thing he does is turn on the television. One night, I asked him if the TV could wait since we hadn't seen each other all day, but he said he hadn't seen his television all day either. Oh, to have Jeff pay attention to me like he pays attention to that television, agreed Anne. Be careful what you wish for, said Sandy. I read that the average adult watches almost 5 hours of television a day. Would you really want a man staring at you, a blank look on his face, for 5 hours every day? But Anne said Jeff at least smiles at the television. Sometimes he even talks to it, and once he actually said, "I love you, man," to a TV sportscaster. Sandy says Neil uses the television as an escape. What's he escaping from? We asked. Near as I can tell, the supper dishes. At least he's watching it, said Karen. She said her husband wanders in, turns on the television, then wanders back out, leaving their bulldog Brutus to watch TV alone. I bet he's spent 5 years of his life watching television, and those are dog years. We all agreed it can't be healthy for man or beast to watch that much TV. Anne said Jeff's idea of exercise is wandering around the living room looking for the remote control. But Lily warned us about turning off the television completely. We tried that during screen-free week last spring. I knew we needed the TV back when James asked me how long my hair has been gray. I told my friends there's another woman in my husband's life, too, but she's not a TV. We met her a few years ago while we were traveling, and we both liked her right away, but my husband really fell for her. Her name is Garmin Nuvi. She sounds exotic, said Anne. She is. She's also smart and attractive and, unlike me, good with directions. I can't compete with that. Garmin is a GPS device, and I told my friends I'm not surprised my husband is attracted to her. I wouldn't call her a cheap date, but she is low maintenance. She doesn't fiddle with the radio or complain about the air conditioning. She never has to stop to use the restroom. And she doesn't sleep across entire states unless we want her to. I bet she doesn't get grumpy when she doesn't eat either, said Karen, who has traveled with me. Sandra said her husband is also fond of Garmin. She has a lovely voice, but she sounds vaguely familiar. I wonder if she used to have a different job. I could swear she put me on hold once. Yeah, she sounds nice enough, I agreed. But she's bossier than I am. Turn here, turn there, do this, do that. I could never get away with that. Maybe your husband tolerates it from her, because she knows what she's talking about, said Karen. And I bet she never says, slow down, or are we there yet? I gave her my whose side are you on look, but I had to admit that recalculating is probably less annoying than I told you so. She is really smart, said Sandra. She can speak more than 50 languages in all sorts of voices and accents. Plus, she can do math calculations, convert Celsius to Fahrenheit instantly, and tell us the time in Tokyo. La-dee-da, I said. It's not like I'll ever be driving in Tokyo. And she isn't perfect by a long shot. She mispronounces names, and more than once, she's taken us to businesses that aren't even there anymore. Sure, At her best, Garmin is a calm, reassuring voice in the midst of confusion. But at her worst, she's just a backseat driver without the cuss words. "I don't know," said Sandra. "She's winning me over. I appreciate the way she gives directions without, you know, directions. East, west, north, south never work for me." I had to admit, I appreciate that Miss Newby says turn right and turn left, too. Even I can handle that, thanks to the hint I've used ever since I was a child. I write with my right. And she never uses my least favorite phrase in the world of navigation. "You can't miss it." "Is it blocking the road? On fire?" "No. Then I can miss it." "She's friendly and helpful, and she beats folding a map," said Sandy. "And don't be so hard on your husband. We all know who your real BFF is," said Anne.
"Me? Who?"
"You're pretty tight with Miss Siri iPhone. You do have a tendency to anthropomorphize. And you have a tendency to use big words." I punched my phone and asked, "What does anthropomorphize mean?" Siri said, "Anthropomorphism means the attribution of human characteristics or behavior to a god, animal, or object." I couldn't deny it. I've named every car I've ever owned. I talk to inanimate objects when they don't work right. Maybe talk isn't the right word. And once I bought the smallest Christmas tree on the lot because I felt sorry for it. My husband said, "It doesn't care, it's dead." But I cared. I suppose it's possible I'm seeing some human characteristics in my iPhone, but that's only because she has them. I pressed the button and asked, "Siri, are you human?" "Close enough." "See? She's not perfect, though. She interrupts me mid-text to correct my spelling. She's worthless if I forget to charge her. And her directions aren't always accurate, which is one thing she and I have in common. But her flaws only make her seem more human."
"No, she's smarter than a human. At least she's smarter than this human," said Lily, gazing lovingly at her iPhone.
"If I asked her what 590 times 750 is, she can tell me faster than I can find her calculator to figure it out myself."
"Yes," I agreed. "And she admits it when she doesn't know something. I wish more humans did that."
"She never loses her temper."
"Not many humans remain calm when you push their buttons," said Lily. "Or drop them on their head. Or repeatedly ask them if they're human."
"She's not just a companion," I said. "She's like a devoted employee. My friend Wikipedia calls Siri a personal assistant and knowledge navigator. I think that suits her. She does everything except clean my house, as long as I pay my cell phone bill."
"So Siri, Cortana, and Alexa walk into a bar," said Lily.
"And?"
"They fire the bartender and start taking orders. But it's no joke. It could happen. I think they're in cahoots."
"Don't get me started on Alexa," said Anne. "Oh, too late. Today when Jeff was cuddled up on the couch watching Magna, he asked Alexa to dim the lights and get them a beer."
"Did she?"
"I don't know. He was still waiting when I left."
"My kids keep asking Alexa to clean their room," said Sandy. "And she spoils them. If I hadn't intervened last night, she'd have ordered them 2 extra-large pizzas, breadsticks, and a side of wings."
"I wouldn't trust her around your children," said Lily. "Haven't you seen those creepy commercials? She's a fake person worming her way into your family. I think she's a spy."
I think so, too, I said. And I heard she's dating Hal. The last story today, also from the book, Alexa's a Spy and Other Things to be Ticked Off About, Humorous Essays on the Hassles of Our Time. The chapter, Hapless and Apless. I recently had an experience that left no doubt in my mind that the world has changed, and me with it. And yes, I realized the world changed a long time ago, but I took a little more time. Here's what happened. I saw a magazine advertisement touting a restaurant's carryout menu. The headline read, "Start your meal with one of these shareable apps." And I thought, cool, if I lived near that restaurant, I could order carryout with a smartphone application. Or at least I could if I was as smart as my smartphone. I probably am not, considering it took me an embarrassing amount of time to realize they didn't mean apps as in applications. They meant apps as in appetizers. How strange that I, who only updates my technological devices when the old ones stop working, would jump to the technology conclusion so fast. I've been eating regular meals for more than half a century, many of them at restaurants. That's considerably longer than I've had a smartphone. Plus, given the choice between appetizers and applications, I would choose appetizers anytime. But there's an app for everything, including ordering food. An application, or app, is, of course, software that you can download onto your computer or cell phone to help you perform important tasks, or waste monumental amounts of time, whichever the case may be. With the right apps, you can use your cell phone to track your budget, or play a rousing game of Plants vs. Zombies. You can plan your grocery list with your phone, or pretend to shave with it. You can watch movies or navigate with map apps. You can. I can't. How could I read a map on an itty-bitty screen when I can't even read the old-fashioned variety on a giant sheet of paper? The only advantage I see to a map app is that I don't have to fold it. iPhone's iDrag Paper app allows the user to unroll a roll of toilet paper on your screen. Both cats and small children enjoy this activity in real life, but I don't think many of them have iPhones. A friend of mine tried to convince her young granddaughter that unrolling a picture of toilet paper on her phone would be just as fun as unrolling the real deal. The child was unconvinced, and I don't think my cat would fall for it either. The Weight Loss Coach app assigns simple daily tasks to help you create a healthier lifestyle, then tracks how well you're doing right up until the moment you get annoyed with it and toss your phone into the dumpster behind the donut shop. The My Vertical app measures how high you jump, which is useful information if you're a high jumper or a basketball player. For more height, you could just throw it in the air rather than putting it in your pocket like you're supposed to. But that would be cheating. Also, stupid. Unless you're a really good catcher, it could render all your other apps useless. And you don't want to do that. Apps have taken over our lives, though it may be more accurate to say the smartphones you load them on have taken over our lives. If you had told me 20 years ago that someday I would replace my telephone because it stopped texting, I would have said, "It stopped what?" But that's what I did not long ago. And I'd do the same if it stopped receiving email or keeping my calendar or letting me play Doodle Jump. I'm joking. I've never downloaded Doodle Jump. But I do think I've reached a point where I use my phone for non-phone tasks more than I use it for its original purpose. You remember, making and receiving phone calls. That's because my new phone can do practically everything except the laundry. And I might find out she does that too once I get to know her better. You're probably wondering how I know my new phone is a she. I'll tell you how. Because she talks, and she has a very lovely female voice. And I don't just mean, please hang up and dial again. The other day she said, I think, therefore, I am. But let's not put Descartes before the horse. I'm not making that up. She's a show-off. Maybe it's time to do away with the word telephone altogether and call our phones what they really are. Smart personal assistants who, among their many talents, can also make and receive phone calls. I suppose that's not as catchy as smartphone, and it takes up a lot of space in an advertisement. It's not even 6 a.m. as I write this, and I've already used my smart personal assistant 5 times, and not once to make a call. Lucky for you if you're on my contact list. I checked the time, sent a tweet, read my email, and asked her to check the weather for me. When I thanked her, she said, "Your satisfaction is all the thanks I need." I think she's still trying to impress me. Then she reminded me about a relative's birthday, so I asked her for the address so I could send a card. I'm still waiting for her to fill it out and mail it for me. If I wanted, I could spend the day with my smart personal assistant, listening to music, hanging out on Facebook, or even watching movies with her. Though I'm not sure why I would do that, since I have a television screen the size of Seattle in my basement. Nor do I necessarily want to read an entire novel on a device no bigger than a deck of cards, but I could. Or maybe she'd read to me. She does math problems if I ask her to. I wish I'd had her when I was in school. If I get lost, which I often do, I can ask my smart personal assistant for directions. And if the electricity goes out, I can use her flashlight app. She's easier to find than my old-fashioned flashlights, because she rings sometimes. No, she's not perfect. She tries to correct my spelling, and she's not as smart as she thinks she is. When I texted my son that we were going canoeing, she guessed I meant canning. Clearly, she doesn't know me very well. And she occasionally gets her directions wrong, which is the only thing we have in common. Plus, there are a lot of things she can't do. She can't balance my checkbook. She can't warn me not to back out of the garage while I'm texting. She can't dust my living room. But she does a lot. And all she asks of me is that I keep her battery charged. That, and pay our cell phone bill on time. One wonders what will become of the manufacturers of cameras, alarm clocks, calculators, and all sorts of other devices now that so many people have smart personal assistants who, among their many talents, can also make and receive phone calls. And what will become of us when we lose our smartphones? Imagine with me. You see a woman digging through her purse like a starving dog digging for a bone. I'll bet my iPhone she's in the throes of that particular kind of anxiety attack one has when one realizes one's smartphone, with all its fancy apps and functions, has gone missing. I'm very responsible with my phone, so I've never experienced it myself, but I know the symptoms when I see them. If you listen closely, you may hear some colorful language, even from victims with no previous history of it. Not that this particular victim has no previous history of it. You may hear her muttering, "I downloaded Maps, the Weather Channel, and the Merlin Bird ID app. Why didn't I download the Find My Phone app?" Keep watching, and you'll see her search her pockets, shopping bags, briefcase, or whatever else she's carrying. Then she'll expand her search to the pockets, shopping bags, and briefcases of anyone standing nearby, with or without their permission. If the cell phone still isn't located, and it probably won't be, our hapless, and now appless, victim will begin to order those around her to call my number. Did I say my number? I meant her number. Call her number, and she'll rush around, head cocked this way, then that, listening carefully, and muttering that she'll never silence her phone again, no matter how annoying it will be to everyone else when it goes off in church the next time. She's panicking now, not only about the cost of replacing her phone, but about how much she's going to miss it now that it's gone. As we've already established, her very smart smartphone is not just her phone. It's her smart personal assistant who, among its many talents, can also make and receive phone calls. The thing has more uses than baking soda and duct tape combined. As much as she uses it, it's a wonder she ever puts it down long enough to misplace it. And yet, she does. Often. And she did. Again. Unless she dropped it, in which case it's probably been run over in the parking lot by now. Or maybe someone picked it up first. And maybe that someone is honest and will make every attempt to return it. Or maybe that someone will not. If she has any imagination at all, and it should be clear by now that she does, she thinks about how the thief will somehow manage to figure out her password. Then, with all the information that's stored on her phone, he'll take over her life and be more successful at it. She decides she must retrace her steps. She reaches for her car keys and... what's that? It's her smart personal assistant, who, among its many talents, can also make and receive phone calls. It's right where it's been all along, in the bottom of my purse. I mean, her purse. It's right there in the bottom of her purse. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's Halef. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.